Hello, I'm Micah. This is Book It, and the following views presented in this half hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. I'm back again. I feel like every time I talk about this show, I always say we. It's only me here, but I'm used to being me, DJ Drainfield. And then the beginning of this show, or not the beginning of the show, but when we first started Book It, it was me, DJ Drainfield, Radio Rahim, and then it became me and DJ Drainfield, and now it's just me because they all graduated. So yeah, maybe, I don't know. Maybe in the future we'll have special guests on this show or something. But it's a little hard. But yeah, this week we're talking about The Vegetarian by Han Kang. Shout out. This quarter we're kind of only reading books by women and female authors. Because in the past quarters, we did not read a single book by a female author. And so, you know, I felt that I had to make up for it this quarter. Because that's actually kind of crazy that we were able to accomplish that. But I will say... Actually, no, I won't say anything about that. Never mind. But yeah, so this quarter, all female authors. Last week we talked about The Passion According to G.H. by Clarice Lispector, famous Brazilian author. We've talked about Women, Race, and Class by Angela Davis, Kitchen by Banana Yoshimoto, Mother of 1084 by Mahasweta Devi. Next week we'll probably be talking about The Will to Change by Bell Hooks. But yeah, anyways, The Vegetarian. Shout out to Han Kang. Famously, very recently... was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature. First female Asian author to ever do it. Shout out to my goat. So I felt like it was only right to talk about at least one of her books. And I think The Vegetarian is probably her most famous book ever. It was also like her first book that was ever translated into English because she is a South Korean author. It was published in 2007, and I believe it was translated in 2015 into English. And there's a lot of drama with the translation and the original translator. I believe her name is Deborah Taylor. I know her first name is Deborah. I cannot remember her last name. I think it's Taylor. But so some people think the translation isn't as amazing as it could be, and some people love the translation. I'm not really sure. Not a Korean language expert, so I can't really say anything on that, I will say. But yeah. Han Kang, super, super infamous. She actually, before she won her Nobel Prize this year, she received a lot of, like, flack and just, like, was kind of controversial in South Korea, I believe, because of the way she wrote and what she was writing about. I'm going to talk about in a second, like, some things that inspired her to write, and you'll probably understand why. But she got a lot of flack and hate. And then as soon as she won the Nobel Prize, all of a sudden, like, South Korea went crazy in love with her. Like, people, like, they started publishing, like, I was seeing news about how, like, they were publishing a crazy amount of her books. Like, because, like, so many people were, like, just going and getting her books from, like, stores and things like that. So it was kind of crazy that overnight, like, people just completely changed their minds about her. But yeah, shout out Han Kang. What else was I going to say? She's won a bunch of other awards for a lot of her literature in South Korea and just, like, in the world. But notably, I think most people know about the Nobel Prize. She won the Nobel Prize, as they said in their little speech, for her intense poetic prose that confronts the historical traumas and exposes the fragility of life. Yeah. She began her work in 1993, and she started off as a poet, not writing novels. But instead she switched over most of her more famous works have been novels, and she kind of switched over completely. She also writes a lot of short stories as well. But yeah, her father notably is also a famous author in South Korea. His name is Han Sung-won. Her brothers are also novelists and cartoonists. Her younger brother's a cartoonist. That I feel like they're pretty well known. I forgot their names, but in South Korea, at least, they're well known. So she comes from a very, like, background, like, full of literature and books and writing and stuff like that. So her father, he kind of quit his job when she was around 9. And she moved, or he quit his job when she was around 9 so he could become a full-time writer, and they her family moved to Suyuri in Seoul. And this was notably 4 months before the infamous Gwangju Uprising. If you don't know what the Gwangju Uprising is, I'm going to tell you. So the Gwangju Uprising was a student-led student-led demonstrations that took place in Gwangju in May of 1980. The uprising was in response to the coup that installed the dictator Chun Doh-hwan. And he kind of installed like martial law, and it was kind of crazy. The uprising was violently suppressed by the South Korean military at the time. And the uprising began with students at Chonam National University were fired upon with by guns, and they were killed, raped, beaten, and tortured by the South Korean military. And it's like the South Korea is infamous for trying to play down things that happened. And they say like very few people got hurt, but it's really estimated from around 600 to 2,300 people were victims. And it's kind of a crazy like range, but a lot of these people, like, there's still people that like are missing from this time and stuff like that. So they truthfully don't know the exact number of people that were like tortured, killed, or like raped and beaten, things like that. But yeah, so this uprising obviously had a very deep impact on Hong Kang. She was probably around like 9, 10-ish when this was going on. And she's mentioned this before, and she's talked about this before in like interviews and things about how this has had like a really deep impact on her her novels. But yeah, so that's Hong Kang. That's kind of a little bit of her backstory. Okay, wait, I'm sorry. The headphones I'm using are really wonky right now. I'm trying to fix them. I don't know what's going on. Anyways, so yeah, I'm going to start talking about her book now, The Vegetarian. Kind of a crazy book. I decided to read it because I watched the announcement of her winning the Nobel Prize, and I was like, wow. Also, The Vegetarian has been on my to-read list for like a couple years now, and I just like have never gotten around to it because I honestly, truthfully, never really... I'm sorry if you can hear the mic moving in the background. I honestly, truthfully, never really knew a lot about it. In my head, I assumed it was about somebody just being a vegetarian. I just didn't really understand the hype or anything, but it's not. It really, truthfully, isn't really about being vegetarian, which is kind of interesting. Okay, yeah, I gotta switch headphones. I'll be back in like 2 seconds. Okay, I'm back with working headphones this time. Okay, yeah. So we're going to talk about The Vegetarian in Hong Kang. She also has another famous book called Human Acts that I really want to read, and maybe I'll review in this show next quarter. But that one's also really, really famous and apparently really, really good. The Vegetarian, it's kind of a short book. It's only... Well, short to me. It's only around 185 pages long. So not crazy long. It honestly only took me a couple hours to read. And it's not like written in a crazy, style. I know I talked about this last week, or not last week, 2 weeks ago, when we read The Passion According to G.H. by Clarissa Spector. That one had a really weird and hard to understand, writing style, but this is kind of the opposite, where everything is quite clear and concise. And so it makes reading it super, super easy. And I think that's why I read it really, really fast. But yeah, so The Vegetarian, it was her first book that was ever translated into English in, I think, like 2015-ish, but it was published in 2007, so it took a while. And originally it was based on her short story, The Fruit of My Woman, which is really interesting. The book is split up into 3 different parts. And I think I read that they were published originally as like different novellas, like as like, I guess like sequels and like, or a trilogy, I mean, which is really, really interesting. The book essentially, tackles and kind of talks about violence, physical and mental violence, class hierarchy, expectations of marital roles, sexism, the patriarchy, and conforming to culture. And I think this is why a lot of people kind of assume, or not assume, a lot of people had a lot of issues with her writing, because I think in South Korea, a big thing is conforming to society, and people that usually go against this get a lot of flack. I've seen this is no hate to South Korea, I'm just pointing out the facts here. They're very, very obsessed with idol culture, where they expect people to be perfect in a way, and anytime somebody kind of goes outside of what they expect them to, they get crazy hate. I've seen famous people in South Korea just get hate for really basic things that you wouldn't get hated on for, or in trouble for, if that was in a different place in the US. So it's really, really interesting. They kind of have a strict conforming culture, and I think that's important to know in the book, for the book, and as to why she was kind of a controversial author. But yeah, so like I said, it was separated into three parts, and the first part is titled The Vegetarian. The first part is from the POV, or point of view of her husband, of the main character's husband. The main character that we're focusing on throughout the book is called Yeonhee. And so the first part is focused from her husband's point of view. The second part is her obsessive brother-in-law's point of view. And the third and final part is her overburdened sister's point of view, and her name is Inhee. And I want to note that we don't know the brother-in-law's name. He's only referred to as brother-in-law, and he or him. And her husband's name is, he's only referred to as Mr. Chong. So part one, everything in their lives. Okay, well, part one starts off with, we find out that Yeonhee is our main character, and she's married to Mr. Chong. And everything in their lives is kind of basic and boring. It's kind of what you would, people would expect for, a regular, normal couple that is living, going to work, things like that. They have no children, and Mr. Chong kind of describes their life as kind of boring and basic. Nothing crazy is going on, except one night, all of this changes when Yeonhee has a bad dream. And so the next day, she decides to stop eating meat, and she gets rid of all of the meat that's in their fridge and all of the frozen meat that they had, and she throws it all away, and she decides to become a vegetarian. And so we don't learn what this dream is about or anything. When her husband confronts her about it, all she says is, I had a dream. She's not really explaining what's going on or anything like that. And this kind of gets worse and worse. She completely stops eating meat. And Mr. Chong says that before they get all this happened, she was super, he refers to her as completely unremarkable in every way, except for the fact that she refuses to wear bras. That's the only crazy thing about her that he mentions. And so this kind of comes as something really random. So Mr. Chong is kind of taken aback and doesn't really know what to do for a while. So he kind of just goes with it, and he doesn't bother her. It just gets to a point for him where he can't look away anymore. And it's really interesting, because he explains that the way he talks about her and her vegetarianism is she's going against him in a way. And it's he wants to be in charge of everything and in control of everything, and her being a vegetarian is something that he cannot control. And so he doesn't like that he doesn't have this control over her. And she doesn't care that he doesn't like this. She barely talks anymore. And she kind of just becomes a shell of what she used to be. And it gets to a point where he decides to call up her family and let them all know that this is going on. And this kind of seems really crazy. Let the woman be a vegetarian if she'd like. And so he calls up the family, and they all decide to confront her at her sister's new housewarming party. Her sister just moved to a new place, and so they decide to confront her there, because all the family will be together when this happens. And so Mr. Chong and Yeonhee go, And the family, it's just kind of a normal dinner. And at some point, the family is like, oh, have some meat. Because she apparently used to love oysters and meat and seafood and things like that. And she refuses, obviously, because she's vegetarian. And her family just gets more and more, more and more mad at her. And her father becomes extremely violent, to a point where her father jumps up and he uses physical force to try to force feed her meat. And he puts like meat into her mouth and tries to make her eat this meat. And she spits it out. And after this, she attempts suicide. She like tries to cut her arms open. Sorry for the explicit. So she attempts suicide. It becomes a crazy scene. Her brother-in-law picks her up and rushes her to like the hospital. And it's really kind of crazy. And her brother-in-law rushing her to the hospital is kind of important. And this ties into part two. In part two, we learn that basically Mr. Chong has divorced Young-hee. And she's moved out, essentially, and lives in a new place. And her family is kind of, like, taking care of her in a way, like, mainly her sister. And so her sister will, like, bring her food and check up on her. And it hasn't gone crazy bad or anything. So she's divorced. She's on her own now. Her family's kind of taking care of her instead of Mr. Chong. This point of view is from her brother-in-law throughout all of part two. And we learn that her brother-in-law is a video artist, and that his wife, In-hee, makes all of the money to support their family. She runs like makeup businesses or something like that, and essentially is like the breadwinner of the family, while he just goes off and does his art and stuff or whatever. And they have a son. And we learn that the brother-in-law is obsessed with Young-hee. And this kind of just happened really randomly. He really never gave her any thought or attention until one day he's talking to his wife and she casually mentions that Young-hee has a birthmark on her butt. And it's called the Mongolian birthmark. If you don't know what that is, Mongolian birthmark is essentially kind of like a birthmark that is like a bluish grayish color, I believe. And for some reason, this, it like captivates him and he can't stop thinking about it. He starts to like become extremely obsessed with the thought of seeing her and her birthmark. And it's really kind of weird. And it gets to a point where he plans out a way to see it and like incorporate her into his art. And so one day he visits her and he kind of gets her to agree to be in an art video for him, and so she does that, and essentially he paints her, he has her get rid of all her clothing and he paints flowers all over her body, and he creates this weird video from it, and he also gets like his friend involved that's a part of like his studio, and it's just kind of a weird thing. And she decides that she doesn't want her flowers to be like washed off or whatever, so she doesn't shower and she leaves them on. And so after he becomes really obsessed with her, whatever, it gets really, really weird. He essentially forcibly cheats on his wife with her own sister. I'm not going to describe what goes on, but she didn't really say yes to it. And he records the entire thing as well. And so after he does that, he falls asleep in her bed. And the next morning he wakes up to find that his wife is at Yonghee's home. And she is watching the video of what he did to her sister the night before. And we learn that she's called essentially like the cops, because her sister is not well mentally. And so they end up coming and they take away the brother-in-law and they take away the sister. And we learn that Young-hee goes to a psychiatric hospital. And it's kind of crazy. And this leads us into part three. And in part three takes place around like 3 years after part one, I believe. And Young-hee is in this psychiatric hospital, and we learn that In-hee is the only member of the family that has not abandoned her. She's actively taking care of her, paying for her hospital bills and things like that, and visiting her. And at this point, Young-hee is like has just kind of refuses to eat any and all food. And as this is like going on, In-hee is experiencing like her own emotional crisis, and it's kind of a really, really crazy era. And the book sort of ends on like a cliffhanger. We don't really know what happens to Yong-hee. We just know that she's dying, she's not eating, and she's become super, super emaciated, and kind of like delusional. And they've kind of diagnosed her with like multiple things, like schizophrenia, and it's just, it's kind of extremely sad. And her sister, though, is still like fighting for her and like staying by her side and trying to do anything that she can. But yeah, so Yong-hee and her brother-in-law, and his husband, throughout the book, they all experience like dreams or visions in which they see their own reflection kind of distorted, and their faces are altered or obscured. This recognizable but like kind of distorted self is kind of like the primal self. And while Yong-hee kind of surrenders herself completely to this, the other two, In-hee and the brother-in-law, only give into it temporarily. And we see that with the brother-in-law creating this weird video art about this his sister-in-law, and In-hee having her emotional crisis where she, I don't want to spoil it, but she kind of abandons her husband and child for a moment. But yeah, so the book, oh, so In-hee, throughout the book, we learn that In-hee kind of envies her sister's ability to totally surrender herself to this, and she wishes that she could do it, but she cannot. The book also focuses a lot on the failure to comprehend people that we're supposed to be the closest with, this is like a big underlying theme throughout the entire book, because nobody really understands the main character, Yong-hee. And so Kang, Hong Kang, she kind of punctuates our faith, in the ability to understand one another, by essentially silencing our main character, Yong-hee, and instead having her story be told by a bunch of other people, like her husband, her ex-husband, her sister, and her brother-in-law. And so their inability to kind of understand the main character, Yong-hee, kind of creates a lot of frustration and disillusionment and disillusionment and isolation. And so it's just, how do I explain this? It's just, it creates like this really weird narrative where we don't really understand what our main character is going through, but we kind of do at the same time. And it's a really, really interesting way to kind of tell our main character's story and get her thoughts across. But yeah, so in the, like, towards the end of the book, only In-hee has the ability to kind of find some meaning in Yong-hee's choices. And she ends up seeing the beauty in Yong-hee's detachment from the world. And she talks about how, like, she wishes she could do this, like I mentioned earlier, but she basically cannot, because she has things, like, she has her store to run, and she has her son to take care of. And at this point, she is divorced from her husband, because, like, he had that whole thing going on with her sister, and it's just really, really complicated. But yeah, so that's The Vegetarian, essentially. I didn't want to kind of talk about the entire plot, just because I think the book is a really, really great read, and I would highly recommend checking that out if you'd like. But yeah, shout out to Han Kang. Like I said, she won the Nobel Prize in Literature this year, the first Asian woman to ever do so. Her books are amazing, and she fully 100% deserved that award, so shout out. But yeah, The Vegetarian, it's kind of a weird book, not in a bad way, but in a good way, and it might take you, if you'd like to read it, it might take like one or two, like two or three reads to like, I feel like, fully comprehend and like really understand what Hong Kang is trying to get across in this book. And like I said, it doesn't really have anything, it doesn't really have to do with being a vegetarian. Being a vegetarian is kind of just like the side thing that's going on and kind of like what leads to everything, later on in the book. But yeah, The Vegetarian by Hong Kang. I should start a rating system on this show, because I realize I never rate the books. I just talk about them. But in my head, I would give this 5 out of 5 books. On my Goodreads, I rated it 5 out of 5. I think it's an amazing book. I will probably read it again. And I will probably read more of her works. I think she's an amazing author. Like I said, I think I'm going to read Human Acts by her next. I don't believe all of her works have been translated into English. I think only a couple of them. So that might limit like what I'm able to read. But maybe if you are fluent in Korean, you can check out the rest of her stuff. I'm getting a caller, but I'm ending the show, so I'll answer that in a second. But yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Next week, I believe... Yeah, okay, so next week we're reading kind of more feminist theory. We're going to be reading The Will to Change, Men, Masculinity, and Love by Bell Hooks, which is it's an amazing book. I've already read it like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I think Bell Hooks is another author that does an amazing job of writing theory in a way that's easily like readable for like the masses. Because I feel like that's kind of a big problem with theory is a lot of people have a hard time reading it. But like I said, Bell Hooks is an amazing author. So we'll be talking about that next week. But yeah, thank you for tuning in. This was Book It. And I'll catch you, well, not next week, in 2 weeks. To whoever was just calling, call back if you'd like. And I can, or I don't know if that's for me actually. But yeah, anyways, I'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Look out now, this is the Diz, Dizzy Gillespie that is, and let me give you some information. If you want to hear some good sounds, the sounds that's round, keep your radio tuned to KDBS in Davis, 90.3 on your FM dial. Look out. Ow. This is the Diz signing off.
Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. For the last 24 years, I've been coming down to the studios of 14 Lower Freeborn here at the UC Davis campus to share with you interviews with poets and pundits, prognosticators, people who care about creativity, people who love jazz by John Scofield, That's a go-go that you hear in the background. It's the theme song for Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much to John Schofield for the permission to use this excellent song on this radio show every week. You know what we do typically on the first and third Wednesdays of the month? We talk about Poetry Night. Poetry Night happens every first and third Thursday here in the city of Davis. And as you can find out if you were to visit poetryindavis.com, tomorrow we've got three great poets, Francisco Aragon, Gerald Fleming, and Florencia Melito. All three of them will be reading new poems tomorrow at the John Natsoulas Gallery, 521 First Street here in the city of Davis. We start at 7 o'clock with our three features, and then we have an open mic with many other poets and perhaps some musicians and jugglers and actors and monologists. Is that a word? I don't know, but I'm going to keep going. So if you'd like to find out more, you could visit poetryindavis.com. This is a free event, and I'm going to be getting all three of these poets on the radio today: Francisco Aragon, Gerald Fleming, and Florencia Melito. We'll have to do so rather quickly because the last portion of the show will be preempted for sports programming. We'll see how much poetry, how much creativity, how much delightful conversation we can fit into one abbreviated edition of this radio show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back in a moment with Francisco Aragon. Thank you.